Blog Talk Radio.
Listen. Listen. Listen to the stillness. This is the stillness of the voices that were taken away from us. People who lived here and here and there and two streets away, Motri Birtik. Voices that were taken from us. We are the voices that are left. We must be their voice carrying their song. And so we will do the hymn of the survivors, of those who fought and those who survived. Never say that you've walked the final way, though leaden skies obscure the light of day. The hour we longed for will certainly appear, and our steps will proclaim we are still here. Zognit kemol as du gehst dem letzten Weg, hoch himlen bleide verstellen neue Teg. Kommen wird noch unser ausgebänkte Schoß, wird abbeugt von unser trockner seinen Dorf. Kommen wird noch unser ausgebänkte Schoß, wird abbeugt von unser trockner seinen Dorf. Vom grünen Palmenland bis weißen Land von Schnee, wir kommen euch mit unser Eis, mit unser Weh. Und jeder spritzt, was ist gefallen, unser Blut. Sprossen wird dort unser Gure, unser Mut. Und jeder spritzt, was ist gefallen von unser Blut. Sprossen wird dort unser Gure, unser Mut. Das Lied geschrieben ist mit Blut und nicht mit Blei. Es ist nicht kein Lied von Erfolge, euer Treib. Das hat Erfolg zwischen Fahnen nicht gewinnt. Das Lied gesungen mit Naganes in die Hände. Das hat Erfolg zwischen Fahnen nicht gewinnt. Das Lied gesungen mit Naganes in die Hände. Da sag nicht keimul, als du gehst dem letzten Weg. Hat schimmeln bleiene, verstellen bleue Tag. Kommen wird noch unser ausgebänkte Schoß. Wird erfolgt an unser trockner seinen Dorf. Kommen wird noch unser ausgebänkte Schoß. Wird erfolgt an unser trockner seinen Dorf.
Once upon a time, brick by brick, our past has been laid. From legendary figures to the everyday people like you and me, all have played a pivotal role in our journey. If the past could speak, what would it say? This is a show that explores just that. From the good, the bad, and the ugly, let's try to make sense of it all together. When the nonfiction is more frightening than anyone could imagine, we look to art. So help me in telling the story that begins with Once Upon a Time, a show that gives history a voice and brings beauty to ugliness. Once upon a time, events and people shaped the world that we live in today. So join us in the journey of exploring our past, a show where poetry and reality meet to withstand the test of time. Hey, Pam. Hey, everybody out there. Welcome to another episode of Once Upon a Time.
Hey, Dexter, how's it going?
It's going good. Getting ready for a school year. Just excited about tonight's poetry. We had not a great topic. It's obviously a difficult topic, but, we had quite the turnout here of rights.
Yes,
and of poetry.
Did.
And so, and right, I'm going to let you kind of talk about a little bit of the topics, but maybe we even have Randy on board.
We do have Randy on board. I'll go ahead and so he can, I'll bring him on so he can join us. So hello, Randy. Welcome to the show. Glad you could be here.
Hello, Pam. Hello, Dex. Glad to be here. How's everyone this evening or this morning?
Doing good.
Hanging
yourself?
Just fine. Thank you.
All right. Well, for tonight's show, Dexter and I ran a contest on all poetry on the topic of Nazi Germany and the Holocaust. And before I continue, before we continue forward with the show, I do have to offer up a viewer discretion warning, which I always do when we have topics like this. Now, obviously, we are always a slightly adult show being after midnight. You have to expect that. But because this is a particularly difficult subject, because there was a lot of violence, brutality, and just evil during this time period, we are going to have poetry tonight that some of our listeners might be sensitive to the images within the poetry. So with that being said, we hope you will continue to listen and enjoy and appreciate the show. However, do use your own discretion. So we ran this contest and we had not only individual people and events that we focused on, but we also had quotes. We broke the people up really into two parts. There was the key figures of the Nazi regime, such as Dr. Mengele, obviously Adolf Hitler. There was also the survivors and the heroes because, you know, as I had said in the contest, it wasn't just a time period of great and horrific evil. It was a time period where people stepped up and were heroes. You know, unfortunately, it was also a time where, you know, there were people who weren't heroes, but, you know, that it's a sad, it's honest to goodness, one of the saddest time periods of history and some of the most horrific and violent acts of evil and hatred that has ever happened. We'll go through as we read each write, we'll say if they wrote to a specific prompt, but I would at least like to read the header quote, which we put in the contest, because I think this is important for people to remember. Remember, it didn't start with gas chambers. It started with politicians dividing the people with us versus them. It started with intolerance and hate speech. And when people stopped caring, became desensitized and turned a blind eye. So I, for one, Dexter, am looking forward to tonight's show. I know we have some powerful stuff. And whenever you're ready, I'm ready to get the ball rolling.
I am as well. So, yeah, let's kick it off.
All right. Let me go ahead and grab the first poem. All right. Come on. Try this again. All right. All right. And up first, Randy, I have your poem. So go ahead and give it a read for us.
Okay, I was, inspired in general by the whole theme. And I pictured the header quote that you just read And I also immediately, when I saw this and saw all the different prompts, was reminded of a quote by Martin Niemöller, which was titled, "First It Came For Dot, Dot, Dot." And it's a fairly famous one. And if you're not familiar with it, you might want to look it up. But based on it and the header, mine is "One of Them." I recall it began as a wonderful unifying movement, raising us out of despair to be powerful once again, a groundswell of hope for a national improvement, and making me feel patriotic, like I was one of them. Overenthusiastic, I excused how some were treated, first attacking socialists, this seemingly on a whim, followed by the unionist, the tactics were repeated. And yet all the while, I still felt I was one of them. Then came Kristallnacht, persecution of the Jews, socialists, unionists, and Jews. This was getting grim. It was all for the greater good. No patriot could refuse. After reasoning, I was content not to be one of them. And as it happened, although too late, I finally awoke to the evil that I'd been seeing while singing a hymn. Then they came for me, the preacher who never spoke. Socialists, unionists, and Jews. Now I'm one of them. End poem.
Great read there, Randy, and what a great piece. Talking about, this almost reminds me of, I don't remember if it was Martin Luther King that had said it, but not acting against injustice, any injustice, accepting, or it's something along those lines of like accepting injustice against us all. And so many times throughout history that's happened, right? It's like, that's not my backyard. It's not me. And maybe even, you kind of allow these things to circulate into your brain. But the fact is that injustice as a whole breeds this type of community and this type of civilization and this type of world where even if you agree at the time or if you're a part of it and you have this type of hatred towards a certain group of people, you're opening the door, you're opening the window for at some point this lens to be pointed at you, right? This is the type of world that you're opening your arms to and you're accepting to. And this walks us through this idea, through the story of somebody that is indoctrinated into this psychology and this philosophy and not really being able to see the end result of the scope being pointed towards them at the end. So I thought that this was a fantastic write and very insightful of the ideology of kind of the hatred. So very well done.
Thank you, Dex.
Pam, what did you think?
Oh, this is definitely a powerful write. And since it won't take up too much time, I am actually going to read the quote that Randy was talking about, which was by Martin Niemöller, which is, "First they came for the socialists," and it's actually a poem, not a quote. "First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." And the quote you're talking about, Dexter, I think Martin Luther said something along that line, but there's also quite a few others who have said something similar, one of them being Eli Wiesel, who was one of the prompts we had for tonight. He was actually a, a Holocaust survivor and an author. He said he had actually quite a few quotes along the lines of staying neutral, and you know, that the evils of staying neutral. And yeah, Randy, you're right here. It's brilliant. It's powerful. Great take for the night. And I like that you bring up, then came Kristallnacht's persecution of the Jews. That was the first time, basically, that a mass amount of Jewish people were killed. And there were, you know, a lot happening before then, but that was one of those times that just really stood out, and it just escalated from there. And it's a sad fact, because the thing is that people have to remember, it's so important to remember that, you know, Hitler didn't come into power through illegal means. You know, he was voted in. He made himself popular. He made himself be believed that he was going to change the country for the better. And when they first started persecuting people, it was all focused on people who were handicapped. And anybody who was handicapped just could pretty much say, well, that's not me. I'm healthy. I'm hardworking. I'm a part of society. And then after that, it wasn't just the Jewish people. I mean, that was the majority, but there were people from other countries like Russia. There was, you know, the gypsies, the Jews, the homosexuals. I mean, if you didn't fit into their purpose, into their agenda, your life was in danger. I really like how you speak in the first person narrative, bringing us into the mindset of somebody who thinks they're part of the boys club, who thinks they're in the in crowd, only to realize that they're not. And I think it especially hits hard at the end when you say, then they came for me, the preacher who never spoke. Socialist unions and Jews, now I'm one of them. Because just like everyone this preacher didn't speak up for, he is now being persecuted. So amazing, right, and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. You know, I think a lot of people probably don't remember or may not even know that the whole setup for this was that after World War I, Germany, not that they didn't deserve it, but they really got the short end of the stick and were a very depressed country. The nation was in depression. The Deutschmark was worthless, and they'd been going through that for many years. So the people were ripe for someone like Hitler to come along and give them a vision of raising them out of the ashes, so to speak. And that's how it began, and how he caught on so well and had many people willing to listen. That's not an excuse for all the people that turned a blind eye, but that's just kind of the way that it was set up. And how he got so popular to begin with. So,
Exactly. But no, I get what you're saying. And I never think of it as excuses. I just, you know, we just kind of have to understand, as difficult as it is, you know, and that sometimes, you know, unfortunately, people are blindsided. They don't see what's truly in front of them. You know, also, I don't know, like I think about sometimes, you know, there's a part of me, I'll be honest, that thinks in my head, how could people have ignored what was going on right in front of them? I mean, there were people who, you know, just basically ignored the suffering of their neighbors. But then I think, remind myself, well, you don't know what you would have been like there, Pam. You know, I mean, you don't know if you would have been a hero or somebody who spoke up. But, you know, so I just kind of remind myself that, you know, if you're not in a situation, you have to be careful about passing judgment. But, sorry, I think I might get a little emotional for this show. But
it's a very moving subject matter, that's for sure.
Exactly.
It's also
exactly.
Something that's very widely talked about because of it's something that's very relevant as far as even today with the use of imagery and the use of media. And so not only was it a huge run of, you know, obviously the economy, which we're still dealing with today as being an issue, but then if you go through the use of imagery and all of these things that are so important that are just being brought into waves upon all of us still to this day, it's important to recognize these things because it's actually not that far-fetched of these things reoccurring, you know, as sad as that you want to think, you know. So anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, when you think of all that we have available today with the internet and all the different media forms and stuff, it's easy to get a message out across the world, not just across the country. And then when you look back on the time that we're talking about, Hitler was a master of communication, of the way he set up things with the lights
and
behind
media,
him.
Media brainwashed.
The lights behind him, into the people's eyes. I mean, he used, like we use the media today, he used what was available then to make him bigger than life.
Absolutely. That is so true. So, yeah. Well, good conversation. And all right. Well, I've brought us to the next poem, and that is Boring Meeting by Alvin Borrow. And Dexter, go ahead and give that a read for us.
Right, this is Boring Meeting. No blood, no ghosts, no dead bodies. Civil workers talking civil about civilians who are not of the civilization, but something to get rid of. Administration, politicians, parties, ministries, boring. 90 minutes, Wansi minutes, Hendrick minutes in January 1942 near Berlin. Boring, all agreed, on packing and sending the product to factories that blew ashes made of bodies in Treblinka, Majdanek in Poland. Boring clerk, it's agreements of all that product be sent after all 10 million of them to become blue ash in Poland wind. Boring, 90 minutes, business over. Thank God there is food, wine, and schnapps to alleviate boring work assignments of sending product, empty ice, and freezing wagons so that they are Jews. Boring documented conference in Wannsee, binding agreement to see each other in hell. I shivered watching movies with no blood and ghosts. End poem. And Pam, what did you think about this write?
Oh, yeah, this is an amazing write. And I really thought the juxtaposition of taking an SS officer, a worker, who's doing this boring paperwork, attending these boring meetings, and, you know, putting that up against what was going on in the moment. And obviously, Alvin Borrow is talking about this movie that he watched, but, you know, the movie being based on true events and true people. And, you know, it just, this right makes an impact because, as he says in the beginning, no blood, no ghosts, no bodies, civil workers talking civil about civilians who are not of their civilization, but something to get rid of. And he sets you up really well for the tone of the right and how he takes you through this one man's life and then at the end where it says, I shivered watching movie with no blood and ghosts. Because how could you not help but shiver? How could you not help but react in such a way when you are watching this document, this movie, based on these true events where people became so indifferent to other people's suffering. And I like the repetition of the word boring, because I think it really drives home the fact that people were trying to act like nothing out of the ordinary was happening. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, I got the feeling, too, of you know, even some of a little bit of a discussion I was in here tonight about where intelligence can lead you. But it's towards indifference, you know, when people want to separate themselves and want to look at people as if it's numbers, as if this is just surplus or this is just a product or these are, you know, it's really removing yourself from the compassion and from the heart that goes into it, right? And it goes, and this is something that even Joseph Campbell talked about, the human soul starts to split itself when it starts to rely too much on the intelligence and thinking, when reality that the brain is a secondary organ. If the heart stops, the brain stops, right? But if the brain stops, the heart can continue going, right? But this is when the brain starts to take over and not believe in what the heart has to think. And the heart doesn't want these things. But the fact is that they're not even viewing them as Jews. They're viewing them as product. They're viewing them as in numbers, tens of millions. And they're viewing this as a boring meeting. That's all of that upper thinking that is no longer valuing what the heart believes. And so this is a fantastic, right? Randy, what did you think?
Yeah, excuse me. I agree. You know, going back to the first stanza, no blood, no ghost, no dead bodies, civil workers talking civil about civilians who were not of their civilization. It's something to get rid of. One of the easiest ways to mercilessly kill your enemy is to dehumanize them. And that's happened throughout wars, throughout history. When you dehumanize your enemy, then it makes it much easier to kill them. You're not killing another human being. You're just killing something. And that's what they managed to do. Like Pam said, whether it was with the Gypsies or the Jews or whatever group it was that they were against. You know, when it goes on, administration, politician, party, ministry, boring. 90 minutes, 90 minutes, Heydrich Hour. In January 1942, near Berlin, you know, it talks about, you know, they're keeping records here, which the Germans were famous for being meticulous and keeping records, and so their meetings would have been very thorough, and the minutes would have been kept, and everything would have been written down, and they would have gone by their book. And I think this speaks to that, and it speaks to all the inhumanity of it, of the soulless inhumanity of these meetings, talking about people as if they're just things or products to be counted and moved. So, I thought it was very powerful.
Great comment there, Randy. And Pam, where do we head to next?
All right, let's see here. Up next, we have History's Cruel Hand by Jody Melton. and it goes like this. Amidst Hitler's horrors, dark and deep, a tale of suffering and indignity caused an entire nation to weep, while the rest of the world was sound asleep, a nightmare born from hatred's vile seed, their pain and struggles forever to heed, the Jewish souls their hearts once freed. Now trapped in horrors and endless agony, a tyrant rose with wicked might and stole their nation's inner light. He tried to determine a nation's fate. Many lives were taken by the hands of his hate. Adolf's name became a call to arms to rescue those he sought to harm. Barbed wire fences, hearts confined, a history marred, a legacy defined. American soldiers answered the call. In the battle of will, they stood tall. With their hearts compelled, Hitler's regime did fall. In the midst of darkness, they arrived, where hope seemed scarce and souls deprived. Jewish people, frail and thin, embraced the soldiers as their saviors win. Skin and bones, survivors strong, a bond formed as they moved along. Tears and hugs, a poignant scene, liberation's truth so keen. Soldiers humbled by the sight, their sacrifice now shining bright, a morning forged in history's frame, where compassion and courage to the rescue came. From ashes rose a newfound light, a breaking new dawn during an endless night. In unity they faced despair, with open hearts a world to repair. Let us remember, honor, and stand against injustice hand in hand. End poem.
Great read. Great read there, Pam. And Randy, can we start with you on comments?
Yes, yeah, sure. Yeah, that was an excellent read, Pam. Very well done. Man, this is a very nicely written poem, which takes us through kind of through the war and the atrocities, the suffering of the people, and into when the Americans, in this case, along with other allies, but the Americans came to the rescue. We've probably all seen in some form or another, whether a documentary or a movie, scenes of American soldiers freeing people from concentration camps, the frail bodies, barely clothed and skin and bones, the piles of dead bodies there. Yeah, this was written very powerfully and described all this very well. And I was taken by it, its power and insight. I really liked it.
Great comment there, Randy. And Pam, you got to read it. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought this was a great reflection on his chosen prompt, which was the picture of some of the Jewish Holocaust survivors on the platform bed. I like how he puts in so much of the history and the details into his write, and how he takes a look at the horrors that are happening, you know, where he says, a tyrant rose with wicked might and stole their nation's inner light. He tried to determine a nation's fate. Many lives were taken by the hands of his hate. I thought this was a great rhyme and flow. It's wonderful imagery, strong imagery. I think the use of the word souls is important. I also think that the use of inner light is important, because it's not only about, you know, it's that loss of the light of humanity. I like that he makes this a poem of justice and healing. And rising up out of the ashes, from ashes rose a newfound light, a breaking new dawn after an endless night. And it, you know, there was by no means a quick healing, but but it was a start. And I think that was important. So wonderful write by Jody and very well done.
I agree, Pam. You know, and this was just brilliant insight of the hardship and just the agony of the entire situation. And, you know, the tyrant that rose to the wicked might and stole the nation's light. And then the American soldiers that answered the call, this is like the going full circle of the entire situation. And they found the skin and bones of the survivors, you know, and just how astonishing it was to pull them out. But from ashes rose a newfound light, a breaking dawn after endless light. In unity, they faced despair with open hearts, a world to repair. That last stanza was so strong and so fitting. I thought he wrapped it up very well and fantastic, right? Very well done. And Pam, where are we heading to next?
Up next, we have There's Auschwitz, and So There Cannot Be a God by Diego Serebrennic. And Randy, would you give that a read for us, please?
Randy just had to leave.
Oh, Randy just had to leave. Well, I guess that will give it to you then, Dexter.
All right. There's Auschwitz, and so there cannot be God. I don't dare to write poetry about the Holocaust. Its black hole will swallow it together with my soul. Anesthesics cannot live in the realms of the ethics. It would be like I'm spitting on the face of God. End poem. And Pam, what did you think?
This was an amazing brevity. Let me just finish typing a quick message here. All right, so there we go. I just have trouble typing and talking at the same time. Well, first of all, his title is the quote he wrote to. There's Auschwitz, and so there cannot be God. Which was a quote by Primo Levi, who was a Hungarian Jew and a Holocaust survivor. He spent his time in obviously Auschwitz. And the thing with the contest is I tried to put up both people who were believers and non-believers, because there were people who survived the Holocaust who were actually in concentration camps and came out with an even stronger faith. There was also people who completely lost their faith or found faith in something new. And, you know, I don't judge either one. But it shows the impact on such a horrific event. I like the emotion put in this one, because even though there's not really emotional words like, you know, sadness or anger, you can feel the frustration. He says, I don't dare to write poetry about the Holocaust. And I feel that struggle. If all somebody said was that line alone, I wouldn't agree with it. I do think that as poets, as artists, it is our job, our duty, whether we're getting paid for it or not, to speak up about the horrific and evil acts of history. Aesthetics cannot live in the realm of ethics. You know, part of me wonders if there isn't almost a sardonic bite to this, right? I could be wrong. You know, Diego might very well feel this way, that you cannot mix ethics, and aesthetics. But I firmly, firmly disagree with that, because I truly believe that poetry is meant to speak out up about social and moral issues. But I like that Diego brings this topic up. I'm glad he was inspired. I like that he brings it up. And it is, I think, an inner struggle that many creative people have, especially when it comes to poetry, because oftentimes in poetry, you're saying something in a fairly straightforward way. You're putting yourself out there. So just a wonderful brevity and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. The opening thing, there's Auschwitz, and so there cannot be God, because you wonder, how could God ever allow something like that? And then there's people on the other side that question whether or not that's, you know, God testing people. And so this whole thing brings up this internal struggle that we all deal with. Right. And I guess that's the internal struggle that was lost during the times of the Holocaust. And so this was a very powerful brevity, and I thought it was very well done.
It was. Yeah, I have to agree. Like I said, I really tried to, find quotes from people of different beliefs and show how people were affected by the Holocaust. I don't know if anybody wrote to them, but a couple of quotes that I found particularly fascinating that I wanted to bring up were these. Let me just find this here. These are two separate quotes. Both were found carved into the wall of a Jewish concentration camp. Find this. Man, there's so much to go through. I should have organized this better. So first we have this quote. I believe in the sun even when it is not shining. I believe in love even when I cannot feel it. I believe in God even when he is silent. And then we had this quote, and both of these, keep in mind, were carved into the walls. If there is a God, he will have to beg my forgiveness. And so it really shows you and both of them equally poignant quotes, but it shows you what a profound effect such time has on people and in different ways.
I agree. And so what do you think about next, Pam?
All right. Well, up next, we have Burnt Offering, The Ultimate Human Evil by Alice Macabre. And it goes like this. Wheels of death sang a dirge for the living dead, deported devastation to Chalmno, Balzac, Zobibor. Railway souls to the slaughter of Treblinka, Auschwitz, annihilation made the SS crave chaos. Corpse chains, man, woman, and child snaked and slithered as far as hatred could burn. Children ripped from their mother's bosom. Families mercilessly torn apart amidst grins and guffaws. Clothed in striped pajamas, yet never sleeping. A waking nightmare, dreaming of the long, long sleep. Neither kiss nor embrace awaited them. Just violence. Millions imprisoned, mistreated, murdered. Crimson mist, ribbons of souls seeking answers. If there was a God, he'd have to beg their forgiveness. Genocide, extermination, ethnic cleansing, the final solution to the Jewish question. I remember you, brave brother, spirited sister. I remember you, fearless father, meddlesome mother, offering the ultimate human evil. I remember you, and so they, lest we forget. End poem.
Wow, fantastic, right? The ultimate human evil. Wheels of death. which is such a powerful thing, because it was like everybody was just kind of a cog in the wheel of that time. Corpse chain, a man, woman, and child, you know, as far as hatred could burn, talking about burning, right? The burning bodies, famously, mercilessly torn apart amidst the grins, and, you know, the families were just ripped apart, and even some of the survivors talking about their mom and their father just having to be torn to pieces. And so this is almost just bringing to the light the scene at a lot of the trains and things that took place, and the separating them, and just the stripping that took place, a walking nightmare, dreaming of it along. Neither kiss nor embrace awaited them, just violence. And it was just incredible violence that waited them. You know, if there was a God, you know, you start to question all of it. I remember you, brave brother, spirited sister. I remember you, fearless father. Maybe it brought on more of a faith, you know, because obviously being a Jew, this type of atrocity was happening to you. Maybe it would bring on a strength in your belief. It maybe almost had to. And I thought that this was an incredible rite, really encompassing all of that. And so, Pam, what did you?
Oh, this was definitely a brilliant, powerful rite. I mean, not only does she have the attention to detail that is important on a rite about history, this period in history, and the mention of the places like Chelmno, Belzec, Zelbabor, Auschwitz, you know, but the emotional impact of it, with the images of children being ripped from their mother's arms. And she wrote to, I think she put attached to her poem the quote, "To forget a Holocaust is to kill twice." But I really feel like I saw a lot of inspiration from the prompt. You know, obviously she mentioned that one quote that I had brought up just before reading this, and she really just looks at the whole depth of the contest and of the topic and the emotional impact that she had. I like that she brought up the striped pajamas, the boy in the striped pajamas. Oh my gosh. I'm sure you've seen that, Dexter, but if you haven't, you've got to watch it.
I will try it out.
Yeah, highly recommend it. It's like, well, have you seen Schindler's List?
Yes, and A Beautiful,
okay.
And what is it, A Beautiful Life, and a few of those,
yes,
other ones.
Yes, Robin Williams. Yes. Well, yeah, it's... if you've seen those, and you will also like The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. But one part that particularly stood out to me was that she titled this Burnt Offering, and she talks about the burnt offering. And there's a layeredness to that. There's an irony to that because of the fact that the ancient Hebrew people in the Bible had the practice of offering up burnt offerings to God, and not of people, but of animals. Like you would take the firstborn of the lambs, or the, you know, or you would take the first fruits or the best fruits of your crop, and you would offer up that burnt offering. And that was something that, you know, in their tradition, was good and pleasing to the Lord. So the irony and the horror of that someone would think that they were doing something that was for the betterment of mankind, you know, offering up these burnt offerings of these human people is just, I don't know, it's mind-blowing, it's horrible. And I don't even know if Alice meant it that way, but I couldn't help but think of that connection myself. And, you know, I really also, the lines here, and it's so hard with poetry like this because you want to say, I want to say I like, because on a technical level, I like it.
Right.
But it just also makes me very sad and very angry. But that's the way it's supposed to make me feel, you know. A genocide, extermination, ethnic cleansing, the final solution to the Jewish question. And of course, I imagine the Jewish question being that whole idea of what are we going to do about the problem of with these Jewish people. That question that all evil seems to ask itself is, how are we going to stop the people who are getting in our way? So, but an amazing write by Alice, and very well done.
Yes, and that's like you said, the evil people. How are we going to stop these people that are getting in our way? Not what is wrong with our way on how we can help or how these people can be a part of society, but it's on them. So very well said here, Pam. What is our next write?
All right. Well, up next we have He Comes Kilnone by Jim Bellamy. He comes kilnone and jumping as he stands, breathless, where hardly any hands may grip, to gentle flesh and walking trips. I skip over towns to land fast, headed in a nape of roses. Families flicker under easy gravestones, slitted a crowd of desireless bugs, cross-deft with hot herds of queasing laughter. And a wrangling sod of red love hangs a fascinated fig tree from eyes and ears and murder. We sign for swastikas where idiot Hitlers shake, and we go through a budding rectal gate when windows flicker around pig-bedded, febrile, gemmed body baiters, crazy heart springs swing across a bedrock neck. Signal for riding ravens caught in a farm when gray-gaped gullies wreck, starred watchers of dunny, greedy gardens, oh, with a pansy in her palm, Plutarch summons death, end poem.
Yeah, this is a very intriguing write, and very poignant and very well done as far as the structure and the wording throughout, because there's slight, you know, alliteration and things like this that are used as tools to really bring out the feeling of this rite. You know, families flicker under easy gravestones, crowd desireless bug cross death with hot herds of queasing laughter. It almost brings out the feeling of, you know, that this had been a long time coming. You know, when you talk about in other parts of Europe, when people would be around even just for public executions and things like this, right? And it was almost like, hey, let's all kind of go and laugh at it or whatever it is. And you start to almost get the feel, too, that these things are building upon this, right? And we signed with swastikas, and it's a dumb thing, but it's something that this has been something that's kind of been building about the idiocy and about the blind eye that we have to violence as a whole. And so I just thought that this was a powerful write. And it was something that was accepted you know, and so I thought that this was a striking piece. What did you think, Pam?
You know what? I have to agree. It is a very striking piece. Amazing imagery and metaphors. I really liked the imagery of, and a wrangling sod of red love hangs a fascinated fig tree from eyes and ears and murder. And I liked that not only because the imagery was fascinating and powerful, but because of the fact that it actually made me think of the song Strange Fruit, which obviously was written about the many horrible lynchings that have happened to African Americans over the years. But it has that whole feel and tone to it of seeing those things right before your eyes and ignoring it. But yeah, when I saw fascinated fig tree, I immediately thought of the song Strange Fruit. I also like we sign for swastikas where idiot Hitler shake and we go through a bun and rectal gate where window flicker around pig-bedded febrile gemmed body baiters. Those are really thought-provoking lines. You know, it's interesting. I was actually reading today about the swastika that if it's pertained to being used in a way that for Nazi, like in public, in Germany and other countries, the swastika cannot be used. The one exception is for, oh man, my mind just, what religion did it originally come from, the swastika?
I believe that it's throughout different Asian cultures. I mean,
yeah,
I believe that it's
maybe,
on different
it.
It's on different Buddhist temples
yes.
Throughout Asia.
Yes. Yeah. The exception being in Germany and other countries is that if it's a Hindu place of worship where the sign originally, the original swastika means peace, then it's allowed to be used. It cannot, however, be used legally in other ways. I don't think that's true in the United States because we allow people a lot of freedoms in the United States, which I think is an important thing for our country. It's just a sad thing that so many people use that freedom to support evil. But this is definitely a brilliant write by Jim and very well done.
I agree. And where are we heading to next?
All right. Up next, we have... Let's see here. Did I grab the next one? That's a good question. Yes, I did. All right. We have A Nazi Wedding by Unexpected Bill. And go ahead, please, Dexter, and give that a read.
All right. A Nazi Wedding by Unexpected Bill. Love is in the air. Eva. Age 33, maiden, so fair. Adolf, age 56, a tyrant, heir for heir. Red Army to the east, Americans to the west, a Nazi celebration with uninvited guests. Beneath the right chancellery, April 29, 1945, Nazis gathered for a wedding, at least a few that were alive. Goose stepping down the aisle, Adolf had to be ecstatic. The vision he'd had complete, fulfilled Nazi Aryan propaganda. Here comes the bride, arms stiff, raised above the shoulder, palm down, hand flat, a triumphant Sieg Heil. Corrosion of conformity, the father's land and uniformity. Nazi regalia, swastika, black and blood red. Eva's gown was pure as snow. The reception was oh so grand, like the invasion of Poland or Blitzkrieg tempo in France. I bet the music killed. Did everybody dance? Elegant and sophisticated were Adolf and Eva, both elated. Mazel tov. Good luck, newlyweds. Eva had her final wish right before the war would end. Braun was her maiden name. A Hitler was who she'd become. Serenade capsule for the ladies. Suicide by gunshot for him. Mein Kampf was now concluded like Adolf. Germany surrendered. I'm sure Jews and soldiers cried the day that fascism finally died. Few will know the beautiful story of the wedding in the bunker, the Nazi regime, Adolf and Ada, dead in formal Nazi ceremony. End poem. And Pam.
Great read there, Dexter. Oh, I thought, yeah, well, first of all, great read there. And I really like this one. I like that he took a different approach. I'm actually really glad that he decided to do a right focused on Eva Braun. I mean, truly just a fascinating example of, you know, and I mean, you just can't imagine what must have been going through this woman's mind. But I had been reading about her, and apparently she was like 17 when she met Hitler, attempted to kill herself twice within their early relationship, one time trying to shoot herself in the chest, although it was believed that it wasn't necessarily a serious try, but I don't know, trying to shoot yourself in a chest. But apparently some people, historians believe that that it was a way to try to get his Hitler's attention. And, you know, you just got to wonder, because even nowadays we ask ourselves, you know, how women stay, and I shouldn't say just women, but women and men stay in relationships with people that are so horrible. You know, sometimes you just can't see clearly. I really like, again, another one with great attention to detail. I really like that second stanza, beneath the Reich Chancellery, April 29th, 1945, Nazis gathered for a wedding, at least the few that were alive. Goose stepping down the aisle, Adolf had to be ecstatic. The vision he had complete, fulfilling Nazi Aryan propaganda. I like that Bill brings up the propaganda and the idea of how they were trying to form the perfect Aryan nation, which that to me, I have to say in all honesty, that to me I think should have been one of the signs that Hitler was just cuckoo. Because of the fact that one of his goals was to create this perfect Aryan race of people with blonde hair and blue eyes. And did he ever stop to think about the fact that he has dark hair and brown eyes and that he wasn't going to fit in with their master race? No. But, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Unreal.
Go ahead. I know,
it's
isn't
unreal.
It truly is. I like the German he put in here is Sieg Heil. And then, of course, some more irony, which with Mazel Tov, that Bill used the Jewish toast, the toast used at Jewish weddings, for the irony of Adolf Hitler and Eva getting married. But, you know, the thing is I really have to read more about Eva. I have to admit, I don't know enough about her, but I guess to me, and maybe I shouldn't have feel this way, because maybe she was just as evil as Hitler. But you can't help but wonder if a woman during that time period, you know, just, I don't know, you got to wonder what kind of manipulation or what kind of psychosis was going on in that brain of hers. So just an absolutely amazing write by Bill, and very well done.
Yeah, there. What's interesting is that there's actually a interview or Hitler's maid that I've seen that's recently. And, you know, she talks about just being so blindfolded at the time and just, I don't know, it's just so interesting. And what I do have some empathy or some compassion, I guess, for Eva. She was 17. I don't think that you would have much say in that time period. Just why I think that, I think that a lot of even companies got a lot of passes in nowadays that are, we're doing things for German things, because I think that the Nazi war machine was such a strong thing that to say no or to go against meant death. I mean, and so I think a lot of things got really skewed at that point, especially being a 17-year-old girl. You probably thought that you were reaching towards the top or something. I mean, like, imagine that. You know what I mean? It's she must have thought that she was maybe on top of the world. But that's a skewed mindset from somebody that's so much older, and to be in the power position of power for him, that's exactly why all of these things are in place nowadays. And so I think that she was a very brainwashed, and it was a very unfortunate situation, and might have, obviously, with her continuous feeling of you know, suicide and things like this, that I don't think that it was very long lasting, her feelings, or, you know, or very true, her feelings for him. I heard that he was a very sexual deviant also, enjoyed being stomped on, and enjoyed being, having, you know, being shit on
defecated. Yep. Yep, I read that myself too, that he liked to be defecated on. I think that's just not
very
up my alley.
So I'm just saying that, you know, if you're this girl that's coming in and to be dealing with this,
yep,
kind of just, and I'm not even judging people that are out there maybe that are into this, but I'm sure that it was like, there was a whole lot more going on, I guess you could just put it that way. And he had just gotten out of a relationship, I believe, with his niece that killed herself.
Yep. He was living with his half niece who shot herself with his pistol. So.
Yes. And so, I mean, you're talking about some very, I mean, I don't know. I mean, so I can only feel for this girl that I think that was really going in. But what a powerful write, and very well done. I'll just end it at that.
All right. And up next, we have Shoah in UK, The Holocaust by Ifolda 657. And it goes like this. Once upon a time can be a fairy tale for a child. But once upon remembered time, an evil truth began. A country going into recession, looking for a leader, made the most horrific choice in a single purpose man. Charismatic, commanding, hypnotic in his stare, Adolf Hitler promised schools and housing, banks belonging to the people who thought him socialist. He became their leader. Young people stood in ranks. He bought their minds with speeches promising good things, but he had his own paranoid price to pay. The elimination of all Jews, gypsy folk, all those considered genetically inferior, handicapped, gay. At first, near fiery, dangerous speeches, a slow start to news hate, then Jews at gunpoint, scrubbing streets. There followed Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass, 91 Jews killed, 2,000 businesses deleted, and still no one wanted to believe Hitler's final solution. Incredible murderous horrors, secret now as conquered zones. Let me control the textbooks and I will control the state. The state, strange bricked builds in secret Poland, echoing dead bodies, Jewish families separated, transported eastward by rail, crammed into dark trucks, no water nor any kind of food, stripped of clothes into prison stripes, all jewelry removed, their gallers quick to shoot, taunt with kicks, gestures rude, into concentration camps, freezing huts, wooden bunks, stacked in fours, atop each other, starving, dying, lost, children taken from their mothers, catalogs of human crime, hard to credit man's inhumanity to man, and no riposte. But across the channel, another leader was inspiring men. Winston Churchill brought Parliament to their feet, men to war. When the raids in Pearl Harbor raged, his now famous speech to Congress on December 26, 41, hit the U.S. at its core. We shall fight on the bridges. We shall fight on the landings. We shall fight in the fields and streets. These wicked, bitter men are ruthless, must be called to terrible account of their deeds. It would take a year for U.S. and U.K. to turn the tides of war again. But the more we do to you, the less you believe we are doing it. The angel of death performing deadly experiments on Jews in Auschwitz to Birkenau, often without anesthetic, even gas. Joseph Mengele selected Jews for the gas chambers, just Jews. Mengele escaped the Nuremberg trials into South America and died while swimming in 1979. Maybe in hell will lie his case. His surely wicked nemesis, a quizzical justice, other perpetrators of the murderous annihilation of a people, of a human race. They came to trial in Nuremberg, dealt with finally with justice. Today, the Holocausters remember, lest we ever should forget. Only to those who have been in prison does freedom have great meaning, wrote Corrie ten Boom, survivor of the Nazi net. Humiliated, shot, gassed, buried, not always quite dead, meant to be annihilated, swept from the face of God's good earth, and yet the Jewish people have survived. We all must remember how easily one man's evil mind could so easily show worth. Hitler duped his countrymen. He stole the textbooks, the readers, all those believing and learning from what they read and heard. May the nations of the world have a care, keep steady guard, lest we in innocence allow another to put evil in his words. Evil starts with intolerance, to which the others turn a blind eye. Soon the us and them becomes desensitized, not distressed from sheer overexposure to cruelty and violence. Thus the evil is perpetrated. Our natural instincts move back, repressed. With our Jewish brothers, we pray to God, let this never happen again. Let our vigilance not weaken. End poem.
Great read there, Pam, and what a powerful write. Talking about, indifference and genetically inferior, handicapped, gay, and it was dangerous speeches, that took place. He talks about the concentration camps, freezing huts, wooden bunks. What I also liked is talking about Winston Churchill and his integral part in aligning the Allies and how important he was. You know, one of my favorite historical people and characters, also a fellow Sagittarius, but it was like he was booted and then they thought he was too rough and then they brought him back and he gave that fiery speech. And he also was famous for saying, when your head, I think it was something along the lines of when your head is in the lion's mouth, you can't reason with a lion when your head is in its mouth or something along those lines. And talking about Hitler, because the previous government or the previous people that were in before him, before they booted him, were trying to negotiate with Hitler and trying to come to some type of like, here, just leave us alone, or like, we can give this and we can give this. And everybody thought he was crazy because he said we can't negotiate with this type of savage. We need to fight. And so he brings that up in this, and it's a very powerful part. You know, and then when you talk about also evil starts with intolerance, to which the others turn the blind eye. I thought that he captured it all right there. So what did you think, Pam?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I have to say I'm really glad that she was inspired. I know she, well, in her AN, she says that for the poem, her immediate inspiration are the words in 2H. And this poem may be too long for your reading, but I wanted to read the whole thing. It had to be read in its entirety because it uncovered so many important people. She says, at the age of at 94, my voice is not good for reading aloud. Anyway, of course, I remember the Holocaust as grim reading in my childhood and allowed that to follow from it. I have stood in Yad Vashem and wept. And I know what she means, you know, because I went to, I actually visited Auschwitz back in the early 90s when I went on a German class trip. And you stand in places like that and you do weep. You do feel the ghosts there. You do feel the emotions there. And while, you know, at her age, she wouldn't, if you think about it, it would have just been her a generation or two before her that had actually lived through World War II, been young people during World War II, her grandparents or her parents. And so I really like Ifolda's attention to detail. And the quote that she mainly focused on was, "It all happened so fast, the ghetto, the deportation, the sealed cattle car, the fiery altar upon which the history of our people and the future of mankind were meant to be sacrificed," by Eli Weisel. And I like that she put in so many of the different quotes, and I like that she put in Winston Churchill's famous speech there. I really like that she mentions Corey Ten Boom, who is one of my heroes of history. Though I have to agree with you, I think, you know, Dexter, Winston Churchill, fascinating man. And truly, when you said a character, I chuckled on the inside because, you know, while this isn't a funny show, that it was such an apt description of him because he truly was a character. You know, he had a full-size personality. And you know, I really like that.
I identify with him as a Sagittarius because, and I don't know why I identify him with that, but it's like, yeah, it was like either people hated you or loved you, and it was, you know, and it's like he did a lot of, he was such a interesting character, But it was like they brought him back to do what they thought he was going to do, and he did the opposite, you know, which is like a classic move. They brought him back to negotiate with Hitler, and he said, "Oh, I'm not negotiating nothing. We're going to fight," you know. And so it was like, what a classic move, you know.
Oh, right. Exactly. But, yeah, I really like this write by Ifolda. Wonderful write all the way through. Great references to historical figures, and a powerful ending. With our Jewish brothers, we pray to God, let this never happen again. Let our vigilance not weaken. Wonderful lines and very well done. All right.
I agree. So
we mentioned that. I'm sorry. I think I keep stepping over you.
I'm stepping somewhere. I couldn't get off mute. I was going to say, where are we heading to next? I couldn't get off the mute. So sorry.
I did want to mention that I looked at the name Hitler, but I apologize. Stelina is making some wonderful comments in the room, so I want to say how much I appreciate her and give a shout out to her. And she was mentioning that both Hitler and Churchill were both gifted painters, and that is so true.
What's funny is that, you know, when these people are of this historical stature, every little tidbit about them gets broken down, you know, and like, you know, all the way down to, you know, yeah, whatever they were into and all of these things. And, you know, yeah, everything like that you start to find interesting. And I don't doubt it that they were great painters. They were really outward thinkers. So it does not surprise me. So.
Right. I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm sure that no doubt that, you know, Hitler was intelligent. It's just obviously that intelligence was used for horrible purposes. Definitely good to see Stelina hanging on the board. And up next, we have You Are Silent by Cedar Chapman. And go ahead, Dexter, and give that a read, please.
Okay, You Are Silent by Cedar Chapman. You are silent. Millions of King David stars immolated. Lifeless, six-sided ash that drift down like snowflakes. We dare, like, catch them with our tongue. Ooh. You abandon us with chimneys never stop churning. Brick-laden flows chew up our flesh, chafe our bones until we incinerate to our naked void. Every Hanukkah, every bar mitzvah, mother matzo, all soup, preachers, rabbis, sons, daughters, it makes no difference. Hatred's gaping maw spits us out like hellfire, scorching one that still walks the earth, emaciated skin puppets who roam a barbed maze, wrought with hunger, nauseated by memories of Sunday brisket, because the smell of charred humanity perfumes the air. Everyone burns to dust eventually. I peek through the spruce planks to watch the cinder rain down onto blackened soil, each ember glowing without a voice. Forsaken, I shall see you soon. And when we meet, you will beg my forgiveness. End poem. And Pam, what did you think?
Wow. I mean, I am just so impressed with this one. And he wrote to the phrase that was carved into a concentration cell camp by a Jewish prisoner. If there is a God, he will have to beg my forgiveness. I mean, these are lines that hit hard. Brilliant imagery and metaphors. Cedar really has brought his A game, as well as have so many people in this contest. I read through the rights earlier today, and I will say that if I had to judge on emotional impact alone, this would be a very difficult contest. In fact, I will give people a heads up that it will probably get to that point to choose the final eight. I will have to nitpick about little things like spelling and grammar just to have to decide between all these like amazing rights. These lines here, two lifeless six-sided ash, millions of King David's stars immolated to lifeless six-sided ash that drift down like snowflakes. We dare not catch them with our tongue. And just the horror, of finding out afterwards. Because I can imagine, I know we had that first show on Chernobyl, and at first people really didn't know what the ash was and stuff, or didn't question what was going on. And I can imagine it being the same way, this ash coming down in the wind and it being from these burned bodies and not knowing what it is at first and then having suspicions and just the horror of it. I like that he brings up some of the traditional Jewish customs such as Hanukkah, Bar Mitzvah, even matzo ball soups, and how all of a sudden, people had to, not only was it that people were dying and being killed and, all this hate was going on, but people had to hide who they were. There were people, and I don't blame them for having to do this because you had to survive however you could. There were Jewish people who survived by passing for non-Jewish. And I understand that, because you can imagine that you would do anything to keep yourself and your family safe. I really like this all the way through, but especially the visceral imagery and emaciated skin puppets who roam a barbed maze, wrought with hunger, and everyone burns to dust eventually. I peek through the spruce planks to watch the cinder rain down onto blackened soil, each ember glowing without a voice forsaken. And I like the line without a voice forsaken because I think it's an important reminder that we need to be the voice for the voiceless. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Yeah, this was such a powerful write. And, it reminded me of hearing this one survivor's account of entering, Auschwitz and the concentration camp. And I guess that those infirmaries were, billowing nonstop, right? I mean, if you're killing, a million Jews in a matter of 3 months or something like that. I mean, it's literally they were burning bodies nonstop. And so his account of showing up to the concentration camp was this foul or this smell. And not knowing what it was, he was 8 years old or something like that, right? He was just a young boy. And he asked one of the guards, when will I be back with my mom? Or when will I be back? Yeah, when will I be back with my mom? And he pulled him aside and he pointed at the billowing smokestack and told him, when you turn to smoke. And it took him a while for that to register, what that even means. But looking back on that, how chilling of a comment is that to even make? And leading into just it makes me almost want to cry because of how chilling of a comment that is to make to a child that asks, when will I be back with my mom? And to point to the smokestack of all of the burning bodies. And so, absolute fucking evil. We've talked about different things. There is no excuse for that. I don't know. this one is very triggering. So very well done, Cedar.
It is. And it's a trigger that needs to happen. But yes, it's because of the, like I said at the beginning of the show, I do offer up those trigger warnings for topics like this. You know, so it's important, but it's also important that poets know that when we put up topics like this, we want them to use their voices to speak up. And definitely the poets in this contest and for this show have not held back. So I appreciate them very much. Up next we have The Gates of Hell by Liquid Mind Forever. And it goes like this. Damnation to you, Lord of the Jews, you who knew the few who could not refuse to become in obscenity's refuse, abused on cue from the maniacal screws. Those who choose to survive, connive, to avoid short-circuited dues, whose rude madness escapes, becomes rabid, foams from all orifices, simultaneously, inhumanely, stands by and watches atrocities committed subconsciously, and we light our shovels, candles, wearing swatches and saying, God forbid, as we hit a crust of bread, we bled our fingers and cheeks to rouge those led into the fields naked, those selected who fed the evil eye of madmen again and again, who said we wouldn't be hurt, that we'd see our children's head against our breast, another Nazi test, another conquest read around the globe as doctors probe and poke without meds. You ask me if my faith kept me alive, if I lied, made alibi after alibi, if I tried to bide unspeakable brutality, carnality so heinous, it's unthinkable, so much so that it is likely to be obliterated as governments override truth so uncouth, even the tyrants deny it, ever occurred as we blur the curs who serve the Fuhrer in his dedication to mass mutilation, guide the populace into the inferno of disgrace for all races. This Holocaust, this historical diabolical permeates its stink, its leprosy through canticles, through oracles, through maniacal bloodbaths, as we hear the people laugh and laugh, as they traffic our souls, our children, their insanity, making all they touch thick with incurable sickness, as we will lick our wounds and lay stones upon the thousands of graves as governments continue to enslave nations. Hear, O Israel, means that all our being, our strength, our heart and mind is dedicated in loving way to God. Remember that for Jews, Shema Yisrael meant to accept the yoke of the kingdom of God upon oneself. It therefore places us under a higher authority. The Lord is God, the Lord is one. And as we say, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. We remember the bloody days and ghastly nights. We held our breath, hoping the finger of God would pass us by and we'd survive the blight of indefatigable fright as old women and sick old men were shot before our eyes, children ripped from their mother's breasts. Yes, we were tested and tested and tested again to see if we could endure the torture of the damned, crammed and slammed, examined, famished, banished, ravished, all in the name of German rank and file. We will never forget, even if the history books banish this defilement to the archives of it never happened. No one and nothing can erase the shame carved into a world of animals sunk to their lowest rank. And still we pay homage and give thanks to our silent God who chose us to be his tortured people. End poem.
And what a hard-hitting take on the prompt about questioning about one's faith, questioning almost like why us, why me, why them, if this can all be in the face of religion, if there is a God, why would he put us through this? You asked me if my faith kept me alive, if I lied in alibi after alibi, if I tried to bide unspeakable brutality, carnality so heinous it's unthinkable. Fantastic rhyme or flow, almost as if it's meant to be spoken word poetry, and written in that kind of aspect. You know, you can't help but think, like, what the hell, you know, what kind of testing of faith is this when you're talking about old women and sick old men shot before our eyes, children ripped from their mother's breasts? This seems like a bit extreme to even put your people through as far as a test, so-called a test, right? You know, it was almost as if, you know, in the Bible, you're talking about Abraham, you're talking about Noah, and all of these things where it seems like God is so callous in a lot of ways. And so this seems like almost in the Jewish faith of something that really actually happened, thinking that if this was all done, you know, in God's eyes, this was a very callous thing to do to your people as a test. This is a very powerful rite and very well done. What did you think, Pam?
It is a powerful rite and extremely well done. Yeah, and really such times would have to be a test of your faith. But, you know, I tend to think myself personally, and I realize not everybody's going to agree with me, that, you know, there's that thing called free will. And yeah, you know, it is a horrible thing to know that, to think that, you know, if there was a God, could he have stopped this? I really like, and it seems like an odd thing to bring up, but I really like listening to, I get a big laugh from the comedian Eddie Izzard, who I don't agree with everything that he says, but that's all right, I don't have to, but his delivery is so funny. And he talks about history a lot. I'm sure you've probably listened to him. And he has this one bit that he does on, you know, how easily God could have stopped Hitler by simply just flicking his head off his shoulders. And, but do you ever listen to him on, like, YouTube?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my gosh, you have
to.
Yes, Eddie Izzard. He is so funny. This is a powerful rite, and I like how she writes on what it's like to have faith and lose faith during times of horrible atrocities. How she brings in the lighting of the candles, the prayers, trying to go along, as you know, trying to keep your faith, trying to keep your traditions alive in a time when you're being persecuted for your traditions. And I've noticed we have quite a few people tonight who have mentioned the image of children being ripped from their mother's breast. And I think that's important because truly, I mean, besides the death itself, the image of seeing children ripped away from their mothers is just such a horrifying one. On a technical level, this poem has powerful inner and end rhyme, amazing imagery and metaphors. Another part that I really like that, I mean, I like this all the way through, but one of the things she brought up was in quotation marks to the archives of "It Never Happened." No one and nothing can erase the shame carved. And that is sad, but true. There are people who will try to convince you that the Holocaust never happened. And to have that kind of denial of time and history is just a shame. But an amazing write by Liquid Mind Forever, and very well done.
Agreed. And where are we heading to next?
All right. Let's see here. Grabbing the next one. And up next, we have Utopia by Time Teller. And go ahead, Dexter, and give that a read.
Hey, hold on. All right, this is Utopia by Time Teller. Calorie restriction makes you live longer. The evidence is growing, with irony much like the white. Slave trader seeks out the modern-day tan. Polarizing of the mind and binary switches on and off makes it for manipulation, coupled with the use of constructural ambiguous orations towards the self, how important we are the self. And as such, we must defend it from our enemies. And as such, we must protect the self from the idea of sharing. And so much we look to find enemies and neighbors and people that are different, provide us with the solution. Deflection is key, and projection is a tool to install software into the binary minds created by the media, polarize and the population of love and hate into love and hate, and then simply increase the number in whichever you want. Starve the minds of options like food, withhold the many truths, and peddle the one truth. Imprison the free thinkers, lock up the open-armed, clamp with chastity belts and impoverished until the streets are filled with children that have seen nothing better. Reward and promote turning the self into greed, a greed of power and with wealth. Head up the cliffs towards the extremes and claim it's in the defense of the other extreme, when in fact it's the same. Tell the followers they are choosing and have liberalism on their side, trusting that companies and leaders will choose to do right. Yet we know in reality the polluted waters prove that, and so we grow children who have seen nothing else into cubs and brownies and guide the scouts and brown shirts and say they are future and proud pride of our achievements. We point to clean stations and streets that money and wealth and power has done, and we ignore the homeless cluttering up the side streets and the alleyways. The march of children continues past and broken shop windows, past and closing hospitals, past the food banks, and past the diagnosed insane being gathered and bussed out of town. We joke about yellow stars and cost of living. We admire first new roads while ignoring the tanks blocking the junction. We admire the industrialness of hard work and ignore the smell of smoke from chimneys in the country. We admire nationalism and the unity it brings while ignoring the finger-pointing at anything that might put a financial drain upon it. Yes, we march as so smart enemies and economical workers
where we each look after ourselves, and we, in the weak, are forgotten or starved or simply removed. Utopia is coming. Let's all sit back and enjoy it. End poem. And Pam, what do you think?
Great read there, Dexter. I really liked this write because I felt like with the strong, straightforward language, it had a powerful message. Even the one-word title, Utopia, because really that's in part, I think, what Hitler was basically promising people was, you know, this utopia, this perfect world, this, you know, nation filled with hope, which is, you know, how he snared people. But what I like is that Time Teller, he writes on that time period, and yet there's an element to this poem that also I think relates to modern times. I really like the opening lines. The calorie restriction makes you live longer. The evidence is growing with irony, much like the white slave trader seeks out a modern day tan. The polarizing of a mind into binary switches on and off makes for an manipulation. You know, it's that whole idea of the media controlling the mind. I really like how Time Teller focuses a lot on propaganda and how the media will tell people how they're supposed to feel about something, what they're supposed to think. And when he says, imprison the free thinkers, lock up the open-armed, clamp the chastity belts, the impoverished until the streets are filled with children that had been seen nothing better. You know, if you truly want to stop something from happening, you stop those who are the free thinkers, because those are the ones who will make a difference. And I like how also that he really another powerful right, and the whole idea that if you learn to control, if you control the youth, and it was like that quote from Hitler, you know, basically if you, he who controls the youth controls the nation. And it is sad and infuriating, and it is true. And it's an amazing right by Time Teller.
I agree. Yeah, this was a powerful piece, you know, talking about, you know, we defend our enemies. There's so much of that, defending our enemies. You know, it's almost as if a nation has gotten that, what is it called, syndrome? You know, it's almost like a Stockholm syndrome or whatever, or something, you know, where it's like, you know, you start to buy into your captor, you know, and, you know, there's so many different ways that this is embedded. It's almost as deep as racism, you know, or it is, you know, it's like, it's all so embedded in everything that you do that it's tough to really fully recognize or grasp. And that's how embedded it was with when you're talking about a Hitler type thing. When it's about your very, you know, when it's as deep as your very essence, as deep as your beliefs, it starts to become a reality. You know, you look past so many of these different things. And I thought that this write captured that so well. So I thought that this was a fantastic write.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment.
All right. We're heading to next.
And up next we have Please Take Time To by S. Sharp. Inside these gates, puddles accumulate typhoid. Muddy fingers bared to bone, gather firewood, breaking buildings, breaking souls. Eye sockets bulge and dry up. Ribs and collarbone stand up, stand out, as if in a high zig heel salute. Looking skyward for God or relief under an ashen moon. Last words burned in a crematorium, etched in the barrack walls. like bones pushing upon skin, and memory last hopes forgotten, voice begotten. If there is a God, he will have to beg my forgiveness. End poem.
Wow, what a fantastic write here. And, you know, please take time to, you know, thinking about just the pleading for God, right? The pleading for some type of relief. This gives the feeling of the what could be next, and what did I do to deserve this, and to knowing what is kind of coming. You know, it would be just unreal, you know, like knowing what your fate is going to be, and to finally recognize, maybe come to grips with what your fate is about to be, would be such a undescribable feeling. And he did a fantastic job of writing that here in this piece. Pam, what did you think?
This is a fantastic piece. A brilliant imagery all the way through, powerful and visceral. I like how he ended with the quote. I did like the part of ribs and collarbones stand up, stand out as if in a Sieg Heil salute. And you can see that a whole infamous Nazi salute. And the words, looking skyward for God or relief, you know, looking for some sort of sign, looking for some sort of hope that you're going to be saved from the horror that you're going through. He really took us into the mind camp of the mindset of a concentration camp survivor. Amazing write and very well done.
I agree. And we might have time for one more.
I would say, well, the next poem we have is like three lines, so we might have time for two more. We'll see how it goes, though. So up next we have When Inhumanity Reigns by Betty Page. And go ahead, Dexter.
Okay. When Inhumanity Reigns by Betty Page. When Inhumanity Reigns, when the heart goes cold, that is, when inhumanity reigns, we must resolve such cruelty. End poem. And what did you think, Pam?
Powerful three lines. You really can't separate one from the other. And so much truth. Unfortunately, there is no easy answer. We must resolve such cruelty, but how to do so is beyond my pay grade. So. But powerful lines, very well done.
I agree. Well said, Betty, in those short couple, in the brevity. Very poignant, very well done. And where are we heading to next here, Pam?
All right, our last poem for the night, and then the two or three carryovers we have, I'll put on one of the other After Midnight shows, like, you know, After Midnight with Rex and Pam, or Break On Through if needed. Or on next week's show, we could do that too. We'll figure it out. But our last poem for the night is In the Ashen Dawn by W.P. McLeod 1. And it goes like this. In the ashen dawn, file plots ripple on black banners after the midnight breeze. Books that once lit flames of light now smoke with burning toes and hair on cinder pyres of death. The barefoot girl with an infant on her lap weeps into the baby's reddened eyes. Soldiers sweep ash from the showers where only sulfur's gas sprays from the rusted faucets. They stack bodies on flat pallets to ship overnight to the dumping pits at the end of a country road. A military colonel leaps from a train car and rides a jeep to the camp, shouting orders. The girl wraps herself in a plaid against the winter cold and soured milk as the baby dies in her arms. End poem.
Oh, what a heart-wrenching rite this is. They stack bodies on flat pallets to ship over. Idea of just the infants dying of starvation and how tiny they were, and soldiers having to sweep up the ash. It is such a shocking image that in the ash and dawn, it's so poetic and so brilliantly worded as far as imagery wise. It's just a stunning rite. I mean, it's really tough to really digest the poem. I thought it was just very artistically stated, very well done. What did you think, Pam?
Oh my gosh, this one brought tears to my eyes. I mean, it's brilliant with its presentation, its imagery, its metaphors. Again, I'm using the word powerful and visceral, but, you know, poetry like this kind of calls for those kind of words. There's a raw reality to this. Soldiers sweep ash from the showers where only sulfurous gas sprays from the rusted faucets. And, you know, when you get to those end lines, you see a military colonel leaps from a train car and rides a jeep to the camp, shouting orders. The girl wraps herself in a flag against the winter cold and soured milk as the baby dies in her arms. And I could be wrong, but how I'm reading that is that this is actually that time period, that moment where the American soldiers show up to save the concentration camp survivors. And this little girl is getting wrapped in a flag. And I imagine it being an American flag, though I could be wrong. It could be some other sort of flag. And it might have even been a Nazi flag. I don't know. That's not really important. But what is important is that it is too late for this baby. And this baby didn't even die in their mother's arms. He died in their sibling's arms or another child. And, I mean, just really pulls at the heartstrings, as did so many of the rites tonight. Amazing rite and very well done.
I agree. This has been an incredible night of poetry. Once again, I appreciate everybody for continuing to support. Thank you, Phil, for allowing us to do this show. Thank you, Pam, for being such an incredible co-host and setting up this particular contest. Thank you, Randy, for calling in. Thank you, Stelina, for being on the board. Thank you, Alice, for being on the board. Thank you, Late Night Poets. Thank you, everybody that continued to write in. Be on the lookout for our next show. I'm sorry about being a little bit delayed lately. I have our next one coming up talking about shamanism and some of the oldest forms of religion. So we still got a lot of good topics that we have lined up here for you. And so continue to pour your heart out, continue to support. We really appreciate it. Pam, do you got anything else coming up that you'd like to talk?
Well, we're already off the air, so I'll just go ahead and put any contest links in the room for people to see.
Okay. So. All right. Well, thank you all, and have a good night.